Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, March 23rd, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a law of one Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I am Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We'll be here every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Carla, I understand you had more tornadoes in your area today.
Can you believe it? As if we could possibly need another. But we did. I had one drop down very close to us, actually, about 4 miles to the south. Wasn't on the ground for very long. It wasn't as bad as the other two that we've had. We've had two instances of them, all in the last couple of weeks. It's just been horrendous. So we're really paying for this gorgeous, gorgeous weather with the extreme weather that follows it.
Well, now, what do you think the spiritual significance of that is? Is that, do you think
well, the law of one would suggest that the inconveniences have begun.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about heat being pounded down into the earth by all of our aggression. And the earth having to make itself balanced enough to be able to produce the baby force density. And it's done that. It's successful. But it's caused the earth to have some inconveniences that it must express in order to shake everything off, you know, and be able
kind of like relieving a pressure cooker or something?
Yes, exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
So really we ought to give thanks for these things that occur in that it's not a global catastrophe that ruins all of us and takes away our history. the earth is trying very hard to be as minimal as possible in its need to adapt to a new density. It's not that this is going to be fourth density Earth. This will always and forever be third density Earth. But the way the densities are nested, it's also part of fourth density, just the way our second density and our first density are part of third density Earth. We have first density rocks, we have second density plants and animals, and they're coexisting with us quite nicely. And so do we with fourth density. So it's hard to understand, but so true that we are all one.
And yet we do have 4D light hitting us. Is that right?
We do indeed. And of course that is a metaphysical event, the 4D type light. It's not going to do much more than statistically skew statistics having to do with physics.
Mm-hmm.
and cause the sun to behave unpredictably.
Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation.
It's a metaphysical situation that we're dealing with when it comes to the densities of Earth. Otherwise, how could we have all seven densities, you know?
Good point. I know that's a little complicated to understand, so what you just said actually made pretty good sense, so thanks for explaining that.
Oh, good.
All right. I'm going to do our opening riff from today, which is from session 4210. Questioner, how can an individual assess what energy centers within its being are activated and in no immediate need of attention, and which energy centers are not activated and are in need of immediate attention? I am Ra. The thoughts of an entity, its feelings or emotions, and least of all, its behavior, are the signposts for the teaching, learning of self by self. In the analysis of one's experiences of a diurnal cycle, an entity may assess what it considers to be inappropriate thoughts, behaviors, feelings, and emotions. In examining these inappropriate activities of mind, body, and spirit complexes, the entity may then place those distortions in the proper vibrational ray and thus see where work is needed.
Thanks, Monica. I chose that one for today because I can't ever emphasize too much the efficacy of balancing the energy centers as soon as possible after they've become unbalanced. The Ra Group and the Confederation Channeling in general suggested that we do this daily, sometime in the evening, sitting down, contemplating the day, our thoughts, our feelings and emotions, how we reacted to the things that went on. And in each thought, each reaction, taking a look to see what was involved, how did we feel about what we'd done, where was it coming from? Was it a negative reaction? Was it an appropriate reaction? Was it the reaction we would like to have had? And it's so true that when you take it down to one reaction, to one set of catalysts in one moment, you can have a much better chance of being able to tell where exactly that was coming from, because you get that reaction, you get that feedback when something happens. Before you even reacted, you've felt something, you've thought something, you've started to create something in your mind that this is how it was and this is how I will react to it. So we actually could stand to do this more than simply in the evening. It's something that it behooves us to do any time that we've got a little time in between appointments or in between duties or whatever, simply looking at the thoughts that we've had and assigning them to the catalyst so that we understand what makes us tick, what makes us unbalanced, and how can we work to regain our balance. Usually, when we're unbalanced, in addition to the upper chakras being unbalanced, that is, you could never have an open heart and feel jealous, for instance. The two do not coexist well. Usually, if you're having trouble with difficulty, it's in the lower three chakras. Something shut your heart down. So you just want to look and see which chakra. Let's see, does this have to do with just me? Does this have to do with a personal relationship? Does this have to do with my family, my birth family, or my marriage family? And you can pretty easily assign those areas of confusion to a certain chakra and see where that chakra is going to be muddied. And then do the work with balancing that particular chakra so that the next time this issue comes up, rather than feeling awkward and inept and being unable to craft your response, you are in control of the situation and can craft the response that you would want to have. You can take that moment and move to the place of choice. I love the thought that we are so powerful in our decisions to choose. If we can do that, simply choose when each choice point comes with enthusiasm, I think we've done a wonderful, wonderful thing. So there's a theory out. A lot of times people think that once they get their chakras open, they'll stay open. So you work hard and you cleanse yourself of all lower chakra problems, and so you dwell in the upper chakras forever. This is very dangerous planning. Don't do this. You've got to sweep the chakras every day. So Elkin's question, how can an individual assess what energy centers within its being are being activated and in no immediate need of attention, and which energy centers are not activated and are in need of attention? He assumes that each part of the introvert needs to vibrate, needs to be working, and needs to be able to offer a tone that is appropriate to the instrument that we are. So be a good instrument. I truly, truly encourage you. And realize that in your power, you have the ability to choose the reactions that you want to offer to a world that is starving for your love.
Wow, that has spawned several follow-up questions that I'm thinking people might be thinking. So,
shoot away.
Okay. All right. So am I hearing you say that the way to ascertain which chakra is out of balance is you kind of have to know the attributes of each chakra? In other words, you need to know which chakra has to do with family issues, for example.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And how would, if people that are listening might not have that information, where might they go to get that information?
I actually just wrote a book, which is in large part a description and a book on how to use the system of chakras that Ra puts out for our daily spiritual walk. It's a really helpful thing to get hold of. The Confederation information suggests a very clear progression of things that we work on that go through the chakras. And each chakra has its own area. And, of course, each chakra relates to all the other chakras, much as in the Tree of Life, the various Sephiroth relate to each other. So it's not a simple study once you get into the intricacies of it and you end up in the archetypal mind and you really do feel as if you need your wading boots. But the simple thing about the chakras is that it gives you some fairly broad and general categories that are easy to understand and very logical. And it says, okay, here's the base chakra, it says. I'll give you each chakra and what it does. Here's the base chakra. If you're having problems with your feeling of survival, if you wonder if you only want to be here, or if you're having, you know, thoughts of suicide, or if you're having problems with your sexuality, you're having red problems. And so, you really need to work to accept yourself as you are and to find some way to be comfortable, because your red needs to be open. It really does. It's dangerous for you to be troubled in these ways, because it tightens up the energy so that you can't get the Creator's light on the rest of what's going to trouble you. So then for the orange ray, whereas the red ray is in the groin, the orange ray is in the lower abdomen. And it is the belly chakra. It is the chakra of personal relationships. And relationship with yourself, relationship with one other person that hasn't yet come to the point of being legal. So that everything is about you and another person, or about you dealing with yourself, you and you, and, you know, how you like yourself and how you treat yourself and so forth. So if you're having trouble with personal relationships or in dealing with yourself and in being able to understand what's going on with yourself, you're probably fairly confused in terms of orange ray energy, and probably need to work on that. The next chakra, and the only other one that I would call a lower chakra, is the yellow chakra. It's the solar plexus chakra. If you hit somebody right in the stomach, you know, and made them double over, it would be the solar plexus. So the yellow ray chakra is the chakra of marriage relationships, birth family relationships, children, parents, work, anything where there there's some legality involved. Your relationship with the Army, if you're an Army man. Your relationship with teams. Anything where you're part of a group and you're trying to relate not just to one other person, but a group, or you're trying to relate that person as he has a role within your group. You know, not just a girl, but a wife. Not just a guy, a husband, a father, and so forth. Those pretty well cover the types of things that tend to go wrong with us, including, as they do, our relationships and our feelings about ourselves. The heart chakra deals with open-heartedness and loves everything and everybody in a way that could be even considered foolish, but it's so pure and so beautiful and shines wonderfully. The heart chakra is that upon which all else depends. The first chakra above the heart chakra is the blue ray chakra in the throat. And the person with the blue ray chakra open is often capable of being able to tell the truth and be compassionate at the same time, so that it comes out not painful but helpful. The indigo ray chakra is the chakra of those who want to do work in consciousness. And you can choose to do all kinds of things with that. Meditation, moving through the gateway to intelligent infinity, healing, teaching, channeling, and so forth. And the violet ray chakra is very much like the red ray chakra in that you can't really be there or use it. It's just a readout of what's going on with you, so that it can be seen at any time. It's sort of your metaphysical name. It's as eloquent as your name. There's only one of you in the whole universe. So that's the chakra system. And once you get the chakra system down and you see things in terms of service to self or service to others, when you see who you had the problem with, then it's pretty easy to assign the chakra. That make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Now, once you assign the chakra, then how do you balance it? Do you balance it just by working on the issue itself, emotionally or whatever the case may be, or is there something you need to do physically or with visualization, some kind of technique for working with that particular chakra, or do you automatically work with it just by working with the issue?
Well, I think, you know, we have a tendency to contemplate and get away from a set format, but the format that the Ra Group suggested was that you sit in meditation and you remember the original feeling. If you were angry because somebody jumped out in front of traffic at you and just about killed you, you had to slam on your brake. What did you feel at that moment? You know, get back into it and feel it. And even accentuate it to the point, the highest, most accentuated you possibly can. You know, you're furious at this guy. And then let up and allow and ask for the dynamic opposite to come in to your awareness. Not to cover that, but to balance it. So slowly you allow it to come in, and as it gets more important, then this original fury has a tendency to fade out, and this all compassion, you know, comes forth. But you don't let it do that. You hold. Once you have created the dynamic opposite, you know, compassionate acceptance of people's idiocy, you hold that in dynamic view with your original anger so that you can see the both sides of the coin and see that it's a matter of how you choose to react. So that you can see that you do have a way out. You don't have to explode because the person was such an idiot. And in each case, you're trying to balance things, not to condemn yourself. You see perfectly well why you became angry. Who wouldn't? You can't blame yourself for that. It's a normal reaction. But once you've analyzed it, sat with it, understood it to some extent, forgiven yourself for it and balanced it out, then it's the kind of thing that has a tendency not to be able to get you next time quite so much because there's a spaciousness around that. You've done some work on that. And so you can begin to choose your reaction instead of just becoming furious.
As you're doing this work, do you need to focus on the physical area of that particular chakra, or is this all done mentally?
Well, you know, I'm not a healer, and I bet you anything if I were, I'd be more interested in the physical. I haven't ever worked with the physical, you know, where the healing is. I know I had a wonderful healer that I used to go to years and years ago, and he worked with stones, and he would hold a stone and swing it over a chakra, and then he'd ohm over it. And, you know, you could feel the vibrations going into the body. It was very beautiful work. I believe in all that kind of stuff without myself having a single notion as to how that works.
Yeah, and then there's the there's all kinds of techniques where you can visualize a certain design or mandala or geometric configuration. They're supposedly correlate to the particular chakras, but that's all done mentally. Do you think there's any value to that kind of stuff?
I do. I think there's always value for any ability to see images and create them and let them become subjectively meaningful. You know, I'm a great fan of expressing through art, and I think it's a wonderful thing to do.
Well, there's a lot about, you know, sacred geometry and certain chakras have certain shapes and that sort of thing, I guess, that clairvoyants can see. So, do you think it would actually help to open that chakra by visualizing the shape that corresponds to that chakra? Or do you think it's better to just focus on the issues? Or
yeah, I think it's better to focus on creating true balance in yourself. Because you know, there's nothing like, you know, the impression that you make or, you know, faking it out on a test by memorizing the answers. You know, in the metaphysical school of souls, it doesn't work like that. Every single time that you run into a situation that responds to it, you know, you sort of fess up. This is reality. I just took another test. This is who I am. Now you don't get the joy of being able to take it home and do exactly what you think you know is the right thing every time. Life itself comes at you pretty fast.
And you mentioned, I said I had some follow-up questions. You mentioned something about sweeping the chakras.
Sweeping them?
I think you said something about how to sweep. I remember the word.
Yeah, scanning the chakras is really very helpful. I do that a lot because right now I'm recovering from an operation, and it's been a heck of a recovery. So right now I'm not channeling, and I probably won't for several more months until I get back on my feet. But I've channeled for years, and I hope to channel for more years. And when I'm channeling, I'm all about that. You know, it's 100% focus on that. Let's see, where was I going with that?
Something about sweeping. I think you
mentioned. Oh, sweeping the chakras, that's right. And one of the things that I do when I am getting ready to tune, to check and just see where I am, I accept the fact that I don't really see these things. I'm just getting impressions. But I ask for an impression of my chakras, and I ask to scan them to see if they're clear, if they're brilliant, if they're rotating nicely or whatever. You know, whatever impression that I can get. And I generally get a treble, you know, pretty good impression, you know, color true and interesting, and pretty much can tell if I have something I have to work on before I tune. Because I won't come to the channeling unless I've tuned sufficiently and have, you know, challenged the entity involved and all that.
Okay. Now, here's another question. Can chakras be too open?
Can who? Stalkers?
Can the chakras
be
too open?
Well, sure. I think that although you don't need to go around heavily defended. And it's wonderful to see people with their chakras wide open, their hearts wide open, loving everybody and knowing like a puppy that everybody's going to love them. You know, a lot of young people are like that, and they haven't been beaten down by life yet. And you just think, isn't that wonderful? I hope they are always like that. But later in life, I think it's almost a triumph if you can continue acting in that way to, you know, be open-hearted. And I think it's a grand idea to be open-hearted. And I know you set yourself up that way for a lot of knocks, and I've certainly gotten a lot in my life. But I think that when I look at a situation, I just ask, you know, what is it? How do I want it to come out that I responded to this? And I don't have by any means a perfect record, but for the most part, I'm pretty satisfied with the things I've chosen to do. And it's certainly not all, you know, things that you want to do, but it's things that you feel are appropriate because you're in the position you are and so forth and so on. I think that it's a blessing if you can at least see that you're going in the direction of becoming more able to create spaciousness around your choices and to begin responding to life's catalyst with the choices that are your highest and best.
I really like the explanation you just gave because it really makes more sense to me that, you know, the chakras are there for a reason, and if there are blockages, it's for a reason because there's issues and catalysts that we need to deal with. So that really does make a lot more sense to me. The reason I asked about whether chakras can be too open is that I've heard psychics say, oh, this person's heart chakra is too open, it's the diameter is too large, and they actually teach techniques for shutting it down. And I was just wondering your take on that.
While I don't agree with people's rights to do that, I do think definitely that you can let your chakras open in an unbalanced way. And by that I mean that if some of your chakras are really wide open and just going on all four cylinders and bright and shiny and whew, and then you've got other cylinders that are shut down, you've got the equivalent of a very sick engine. You need to have all your chakras working in a balanced way. Balance is always a key for the Confederation. And they're not looking to get, like for instance, you think, well, gosh, if I can get those upper chakras going, you know, the old spiritual truth chakra and the old meditation chakra and the old open heart chakra, if I can work on those, which is fun, why do I have to work on those old dreary old lower chakras, which aren't fun at all? Why can't I just ignore them? And the problem is that you're an instrument and you have to make all your notes play right. And that includes the lower and the upper, which are just as beautiful as each other. You know, all things being one. You see, it comes up so often in the Confederation philosophy. Why? Well, all things are one. So you need to clean up the whole house. Evelyn Underhill is an Episcopalian living in England. So she's an Anglican, a mystic, and she wrote about the whole house, keeping the whole house clean, spiritually speaking. And she said, you know, you're really drawn to that upstairs room all the time, but you know, you've got your living room, and she was basically working on the chakras when she wrote this because you've got your bedroom of sexuality and. You know, whether or not you even want to live. You've got the living room of personal relationships and your relationship with yourself and parties and, you know, the events of life. And you've got your kitchen where you're married and where these things occur because of the fact that you're married and you're a daughter and you're this and that and you have these duties that you must do. She said, all those rooms get dirty. And she said, don't forget the bathroom. And she sort of left that one. And then she said, you have to clean the lower floor before you can climb the stairs to the upper floor. And I love that because, you know, it's so true. And when you do climb the stairs, when you've tuned up and you're ready to do what you've tuned up to do. For me, I tune up before the radio show. I tune up before I channel. I tune up before I try to write. I want to be able to be a little bit closer to my highest and best, if I possibly can be. But I really think any time you do that, you're really helping yourself out a lot, that's for sure.
If that's the case, say, for example, the upper chakras or maybe at least the heart chakras wide open and the lower chakras are have some blockage, would it make more sense to focus on opening the lower chakras to balance the higher chakras rather than trying to shut down the heart chakra? Because right. I remember these psychics saying, no, they need to close that chakra up. And I kind of wondered about that.
Yeah, I've had that done to me, actually. In 1977, not so long ago, I probably got back before a lot of the people that listen to this were alive. But there was a fellow named Andrea Puharich, and he and Don Elkins, my research partner and beloved companion, got together in the 70s, and they wanted to do some work together. So Andrea conceived of this idea that we would do what he called a mind link. He had gotten information from various psychics and channels that he already had living with him or he was corresponding with, that the extraterrestrial good guys were just about ready to go home because they were so fed up with us because they didn't think that we on Earth could come together over anything. We would just always quibble and be unable to keep unity. And they've had it. So, of course, instructed he was acting as questioner for his own channeling source. And so he said, well, what if I got together a mind link and we showed you that we could do that? And they said, well, okay, so get together one. So Don and I were part of the mind link at Andrea Puharich's in Ossining, New York in 77. And it was true. It was excruciatingly difficult to stay unified. Every faction in that group, seems to take its turn at being total fools and idiots with regards to the other people. The ones with money, instead of spending a little money and making everybody comfortable and eat well, would make most of the people who had no money sit in the sweltering sun on a trip we took down, a couple of days trip down into North Carolina from New York, while she proceeded to eat a civilized dinner. It didn't occur to her that there were other people that had not even any money to get any food and were just sitting there sweltering and had no air conditioning. So it was every clash from age clashes to sexual clashes to cultural clashes, the cultural being probably the most toxic. Naturally, meditating all the time the way we did together, we were meditating at least twice a day trying to create the mind link. And this caused all the women to move into their monthly flow. If you meditate all the time and you haven't not used to that, that'll be your body's response. You go into flux.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we had the X number of people, women at the thing, probably 17, 18. And within a couple of days of starting the regimen of meditations and so forth together, we all had gone into flux. Well, we had people there, like a guy named Haki Bey from the Middle East, that felt that you should not even associate with a woman in that condition.
Wow.
And, got to be really strenuous. And, of course, then there were the people that thought that they knew best about talking wealthy people into giving them contributions. And so they were acting like fools and I'm sorry to say, using their so-called channeling in a very conscious way to try to get this guy's money, while the guy was just sort of struggling to get away but couldn't, like a turtle on his back, stuck. and these women kept pinning him down. I felt really sorry for him. He was very intelligent, and he had given Andrea like a 35,000 acre farm in North Carolina. He was a cigarette millionaire, Reynolds is his name. He was a great student. Don was a professor of physics, and he glommed on to Don like crazy. And Don got up early, and so did he. That's just, you know, a nature thing. Some people do, some people don't. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, and there would be Don and this guy and me, of course, talking about philosophy and physics and so forth. And those girls got real jealous, the 40, 50-year-old divas from across the pond. And and they kicked me out of the house. I'd been sleeping in the house as opposed to one of the unheated cabins because of my delicate health. But no, they didn't want me anywhere where he could talk to me, because if I was around, he would talk to me. He wouldn't talk to them. So they had to get me cleared out from underfoot. Little did they realize that if they just left us, Don and me, little innocent babe in the woods, Don and me, to talk to Josh, Josh probably would have fallen in love with Elk and given, you know, Andrea anything he wanted, because it was Don's friend, you know. It was Don's and Carla's friend. Of course I'm going to help, you know. And they didn't, they just couldn't see it. So they ended up getting this poor guy a death of a cold, because they dragged him around saying that there was going to be a UFO sighting. And, of course, there was a UFO sighting, but he didn't see it. The kids did. It was all very educational and funny, and we did create the mind link, I will say that. And so we sort of averted a catastrophe there. We've had a lot of acknowledgments of that over the years from other psychic groups writing in and saying thank you very much. And I'm glad to have been part of it, but it taught me at least as much about the human condition, which can be fairly disappointing and wretched, as it did about the wonderful idealistic ways that we can become one. It was a very rich experience.
Wow, interesting story. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I think we are going to go to a question, and I would like to remind everyone that you are listening to In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Reichert, and you can submit your questions by, if you want to be live on the air, you can call 646-595-2294. That's 646-595-2294. Be sure to hit the one key if you'd like to ask your question live. I'm going to take a question submitted from the Bring Forth Forum, from Shinar. Shinar says, hello, Carla. Recently, there's been a lot of discussion around STS in the forum, and I was advised to ask this question of you. According to the notation on the LL Research website, where the Brown Notebook links are posted, you have chosen to disassociate yourself from them. I wonder if you could clarify if you were the one who chose to post them at the site, and if so, what would be your reason for wanting to disassociate from them? And secondly, what are your thoughts about the differences that exist between Ra's explanation of self-serving and that of Hatan and Latwi, where Hatan seems to be far more precise about the dangers of partaking in self-serving attitudes, and how the darkness is such a problem upon mankind?
Okay. Hello, Shinar. It's good to hear from you and to work with your vibrations. I appreciate your thoughts and your concerns a lot, and I'll be glad to share with you as I can. The Brown Notebook story is a story that, you know, is simple in terms of the time that it was actually tangential to us in the Louisville group, because there was a point in time in which Don, a physics teacher at the University of Louisville, had met Hal Price, who was a detail checker at Ford, very highly advanced position in terms of what people did in the plant. And he had heard that Don was interested in UFOs. So Hal contacted Don and said, you know, I just came from Detroit, and I've come from a channeling group up there. And they called themselves the Detroit Group then, which is why we started out calling ourselves the Louisville Group. Well, he handed Don one volume, The Brown Notebook. By the way, it was never a brown notebook. He got that name from what it originally was, but the typescripts of it were in other colors. Oh, well. Anyway, Don read The Brown Notebook, which was done in the late 50s. And in the Brown Notebook, he read instructions from the Confederation of Planets in the service of the Infinite Creator as to how to create a contactee group. And they suggested that you basically created a meditation group, and then that you let the people in the meditation group speak when they began to feel that they had been impressed to speak, and that that's the way that the Confederation could get through to them. Don thought this was very interesting. He was a physics professor. He was also spent all of his time, his free time, in paranormal studies. He'd flown all over the United States investigating the early UFO contactees like Orfeo Angelucci and all of the early researchers. And so by the time he talked to Hal in 1960, probably, he had been working at this and flying all over and investigating and hearing seances and all this kind of stuff for over 5 years. And he was interested in Hal's material, and he and Hal got together and decided they would create a little experiment after the Brown Notebook. And so they were going to, Don recruited 12 men out of his freshman physics class. One of those 12 was, at the time, my partner in singing, Jim DeWitt. It sounded like an interesting meditation group to me, and I said, could I be a part of it? And they said yes. So there was the 12 guys and me and Don and Hal and Joe, his wife, and that was the Louisville group, and we sat down and meditated silently for every week, every Sunday. It began in January of 1962. Okay. From that point on, we developed a history. We began by getting the same entities that had been gotten in the Detroit group, most especially Hatton, but also Oxall and Latwee, others of that ilk, if I'm not mistaken. But slowly but surely, the two bodies of material pulled apart, naturally. And meanwhile, the Detroit group kept putting out material, and it was getting more and more specific and more doom and gloom-oriented. And the even the channeling sources, like Hatton became Commander Hatton or Lord Commander Hatton or something. It became very ritualistic and rigid, and emphasis on hierarchy and glory and honor. And the whole energy of their contact had changed sufficiently that I felt that it was important to distance ourselves as a channeling group from that group. Because if you read Man, Consciousness, and Understanding and all the other archives that these friends of that group kindly gave to us to put up, you could see that the material became quite a bit different than our material. Okay. So here I am wanting to put that in the archives because I'm a librarian. You keep for the historical record those things that have occurred, and this was part of the story of L&L, even though the tangent of its actual connection didn't go into all the other material. There was no other place for the material, and we had the space to keep it, and it was my vote to keep it and let people have their own chance to read it, understand it, and decide what they thought about it. You know, it's not my business what other people think at all. But it's just, I felt as a part of the structure of L&L research that I would want to distance myself from it because there are things about it that are, to me, objectionable. And I simply didn't want that kind of energy coming into the L&L doors. That makes sense?
Yes, it does. And I think the reason this question came up is recently there's been some discussion and debate on the Bring Forth Forum about whether it's ever appropriate to dabble in the dark, so to speak. We have a number of discussions on the forum about the STS path, and there's a lot of people that would like to understand it better and to accept the STS path. And there's a little bit of dispute because other members are saying, you shouldn't dabble with that. You know, that's pretty dark stuff. And I remember Quo saying, you know, we are not of that path. We are, it's a bloody path and some prefer it. We are not of that path. We're of the radiant path. And just in the quote that I just read today, Ra mentioned in examining the inappropriate activities of mind, body, and spirit, Ra used the word inappropriate. And yet in other places, I know Ra has said, well, there's really no right and wrong, ultimately. So I think there's some confusion. A lot of people are saying, well, it doesn't matter what you do. There's no wrong. There's no right, you know, it doesn't matter. And yet there is a, such a thing as appropriate or inappropriate. So I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit. What's the difference between right and wrong versus appropriate and inappropriate?
Well, the difference between, I won't answer that question right away. I'll make up my own. The difference between third density right and wrong and sixth density right and wrong are vastly different. Not because right and wrong are different, but because the perspective is different. The fourth density, I mean the third density sees right and wrong and chooses right, knowing that it's important to choose the light. The fourth density, the density of love, is even stronger for that, choosing the appropriate, choosing the beautiful, choosing the loving, choosing the open-hearted, and so forth. In the density of wisdom, you begin to encourage yourself to develop those faculties of mind and heart that allow you to be wise as well as compassionate. And you begin to see the point of view of the people that are working in a negative point of view. You may very well still be the strongest aid and supporter of the positive side, but you understand what's going on with the negative because you have gained the wisdom to do so. You see what they're doing. It probably makes you even better equipped to deal with negative entities, to be wise. And when you're not fighting for your life, you're liable to be less fervent. So a fifth density entity and certainly a sixth density entity is going to start talking in terms of the fact that, well, you know, life and, you know, right and wrong used to be life and death problems. And now we don't really find it to be so. Well, of course, the subtext is because everybody knows right and wrong. nothing is left, you know, that has to be gone through. You've finally gotten to the density of unity, and you can start preparing yourself to move back into the Creator. So I think questions like this sort of collapse in on themselves. Because of the fact that it's a matter of perspective, naturally, nobody of a higher vibration, for instance, the Ra group, if asked whether or not the choice that you made to be of service or to not be of service, to, say, kill somebody or to use somebody, was important, they wouldn't say, well, it's unimportant. They would say, well, it is important subjectively in that the person will do that, then that person will get the catalyst that comes from expressing himself in that way. And then, you know, he will have to deal with whatever aftermath of the situation he creates, and it flows on, and you slowly learn. But it's not that the third density and the sixth density are divided in that one thinks that all is one and there is no right and wrong, and one thinks that all is not one and that there is right and wrong, even though that's exactly what it says in black and white, in words, in the book. That's part of the joy of spiritual information. It's information full of paradoxes and full of mystery. I can't really go too much further than that. So I do understand the difference in the point of view of fourth and sixth. I understand what's behind it, but I don't think that you could explain a sixth density point of view to a fourth density person in a way that would convince a third or fourth density person that they were accurate. It would all seem like gobbledygook, and vice versa. So it's not that never the twain shall meet, but it's just that the light is different in each density.
And then complicating the matter is the fact that presumably many of us are wanderers from fourth, fifth, or sixth density coming into this with those understandings, and yet here we are in 3D. And I'm reminded of an article I read one time about political correctness taken too far. It was a high school class, or maybe a college sociology class, and they were discussing, you know, is there such a thing as right and wrong? And of course, you know, people have gone too far in one direction and trying to control every little thing and micromanage people's lives. And then to go politically correct, it's kind of like, well, hey, you're cool, I'm cool, do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt anybody. But taken too far, a student said, well, you know, I don't personally agree with what Hitler did, but who am I to say he was wrong? And the whole article was about this idea that, hey, you can't ever say anything's wrong when you take it to that extreme. And I think that's kind of what's been happening. You know, that's what's being discussed. I think, you know, the people on the forum, as we're discussing these concepts, they're saying, yes, but we're wanderers. We're from 6D, and Ross said there's no right and wrong. Therefore, it doesn't matter what you do, you know. And there's a little dispute about that. So I think what you just explained really does shed some light, that it is a matter of perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't go around being a sixth density person in third density. It's not going to work. I can be the one who's tried. It is not going to work. Listen to me, folks. Live in the third density. Every morning when Jim gets to the part in the banishing ritual of the lesser pentagram where he calls upon Ariel, I say to Ariel, help me to serve in this density. I know that's one of my biggest faults, is to tend to have too high vibe an idea as you know what should be done, leaving everybody else that's out there in the real world twisting in the wind going, did you hear that? That's not going to work, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like, Carla, calling Carla, Earth calling Carla. So, having lived a lifetime trying to make myself ground and dig into the earth here and appreciate the fact that I'm human, I really do believe that it's a very important shift in perspective, and it's important that we not try to stay sixth density. We're not going to lose what we've done. We're not going to lose what we've had. We are that. But in order to make the most of this experience in which we're really supposed to be serving, we need to be functional in this density. So I pray for it every day because I know it's one of my biggest failings.
And being that this is the density of choice, then am I hearing you say, maybe it's okay to say, you know, maybe that action isn't appropriate, or gasp, wrong? I mean, is that acceptable to ever think something's maybe wrong?
It is to me.
Okay.
I mean, for myself, I make that choice very clearly. I would hate to be on a jury and have to make the choice for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband did it, and he said he didn't have a problem with it at all, and it went very well for him. So I don't know, maybe I'll whip that there too and would have a different, you know, experience if I was ever called.
Yeah, I've thought about that too. I don't know how I would do. But there seems to be a lot of hesitation. You know, people are almost afraid to make any sort of assessment of anyone's actions because they're afraid of judging. And yet, surely there's a difference between judging a person versus assessing whether something's appropriate for someone on the STO path.
That's certainly true, but it's a difference that a lot of people have trouble making. A person isn't a person's act. A person's soul is not a person's earthly being. But it's very easy to relate them and think that they are one, and therefore not be able to forgive a person's acts. You know, where if you can see that that was just something that the person did, it was just secondary to the person, then you can have more luck in seeing the person as a soul and a person that doesn't need forgiveness.
And is it not the epitome of paradox to love and accept that person while simultaneously declining their service if it's STS natured, or maybe deciding that that's inappropriate for you personally?
It certainly is. If you saw the kind of tangle that Don got in during the Ra sessions, because he was going, you know, he was talking to Ra and he was saying, well, is there anything we can do to help the negative entity? I mean, we want to be friends with everybody. And Ra said, well, I don't think so. But are you willing to let Carla die? And, you know, we don't think so. Let us know, you know.
Yeah.
And Don just couldn't get it. He couldn't get that you can't serve a service to self entity except by serving him, you know. And of course, that was one thing Don wasn't going to stop the sessions, and that's what they wanted. So it was hilarious. So I mean, I thought it was, as you read it in the book, it comes up. It's sort of like, you know, comic relief to read about Don trying to please the negative entities.
Yeah, I remember that. And even Ra had boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ra talked about declining the service of the STS entities. So how is that balanced with the idea of acceptance? I mean, they did decline. They did establish, no, we don't want that service.
Yeah. Well, you have to set limits for yourself. We were talking earlier about that. You absolutely need to set these limits and say, this is who I am, this is how we shall go on, and the people of my house shall live like this. And I used to be terrible at it, and I still, you know, have time. I have to put time and energy into drawing limits when they're necessary, but I can do it now because I've done it and realize it doesn't kill you. But I think that spiritual maturity, there's a lot of spiritual maturity simply in looking at a situation, realizing that it's all played out as far as being able to talk somebody into seeing it differently. And that the best thing to do is to allow it to be there. You just let it lie. You don't engage, and you know, you just draw a little boundary and say, no, I'm not going there. And your life, you know, becomes that much simpler because you have stopped running your head into a brick wall. And that's why boundaries are real good things to have. Because that's pretty
okay.
Much the time.
Well, I think that hopefully will clear that up in some people's minds. I know I found it helpful, so thank you for that great explanation. I think the part about the perspectives really, really will help a lot. And Carla, we're out of time, so
I'll be doggone. Well, it was a pleasure being here, Monica. And guys, it's been fun to talk with you all. You should call in more.
Yeah, we really, really, really would love to have people call in and hit the one key and actually be on the show. So don't be shy. Give us a call next week. Actually, next week we're going to have a special guest. We're going to have Toby Wheelock on the show. So it'll be a special show. You don't want to miss that. And I'm going to let everybody know that if you would like to call, call in, you can call 646-595-2294 next week, and you can visit our website, llresearch.org, which is our archive website, home to 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and much more, and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. It's our community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for joining us. We will be here next week, Friday, March 30th at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern.